This is Bull's Eye on Weather on AM 930. The risk of light snow tonight, low near 25. Snow showers Thursday, high of 37.
Right now it's cloudy and 34.
It's Bull's Eye on the Afternoon with Andy Bull Barch and Matt Douglas on AM 930 WEOL.
44 minutes after 3 o'clock, opening hour of Bullseye on the Afternoon on AM 930 WEOL. Andy Bull Barch joined alongside Matt Douglas, taking you up until 6 o'clock tonight. You know, every time we get a new sponsor, we have all kinds of fun with it. Lisa Roberson with the Chronicle Telegram joining us here in studio as she does every single week on our local beat with Lisa, brought to you by Vandermark Jewelers. Vandermark Jewelers, they've been around for just a couple of years. Perhaps you've heard of them. They are in Elyria at East Broad Street near the hospital. Vandermark Jewelers, a trusted name in jewelry. We were talking about plantains during the break. You know, we were going over our Food for Thought sponsor today, Coquito's Deli and Bakery, and we were telling Lisa about the deliciousness that we had here in the office yesterday that you and I really got to enjoy because we had no show yesterday. And we were giving Lisa the rundown of what we had.
Mm-hmm.
She was a little bummed that we didn't have a show yesterday because if we had the show yesterday.
That's a good point.
I missed out big time.
Yeah. Sorry about that. There might be something left in the fridge, and you may have to stop by on your way out, Lisa.
But the plantains, we had talked about the plantains, and Lisa was telling us that there are some days she's an all-star chef at home.
Yes.
And some days, you know, you end up going with takeout, right?
I am a hit-or-miss cook. It's either great or it's takeout, like we said.
So plantains, you've cooked plantains before?
Yes, I think my problem with them is maybe I'm cooking them too fast or too slow. It's just I can't get the right texture, the right taste from them. Maybe I'm not letting them ripe, you know, enough because you have to make sure they're really ripe so you can get a good, I don't know. So if I can go someplace and purchase some, I would like that.
Yeah, I'm with you. I have no idea how to cook a plantain. I know I had them good. I remember I had a Spanish teacher in high school who I would say went a little above and beyond. It wasn't just a Spanish class. She taught you the culture and everything that went with it. And she brought some in one time. They were just amazing. There's no way I could do anything along those lines. I'll say that.
Well, these fried plantains that we had yesterday. Wow. I mean, just out of this world awesome. Out of this world awesome. So, you know, we'll see if we can talk to Candy Banks to see if she can bring some more samples in here so that you can try them next time.
You know, if it's a new business in Lorain County, maybe the Chronicle-Telegram should spotlight them.
There you go, yeah.
See, that's how these things work around here. There's always a way of us.
Always a way.
Yeah, without question. All right. Well, as much as we'd like to talk about fried plantains and coquitos the next 15 minutes, I guess it's time to get down to business here. You had alluded to something in the interview we did with you a week ago, talking about the details on the Elyria Works Now program and how they're still going to move forward with it, even though they did not get the grant they were expecting to help fund it. What are the details on this?
Well, the Elyria Works Now program is a jobs program designed to get people ready for work. There's a population of Elyria residents that are high school graduates, but they don't have clear career paths and ways of going about careers. And so, you know, they are considered the underemployed and unemployed. And then you have manufacturing companies that need entry-level positions filled, but they don't have anyone to fill these positions. They're having trouble filling the positions. So Elyria Works Now is going to kind of bridge the gap between those two populations, getting people who need jobs into jobs that need to be filled.
So are they kind of looked at as like recruiters, like they kind of help connect the dots there? They see people who are seeking work and they see the employer that's looking for someone to come work for them? Is that what they do essentially?
Connect the dots and also help people learn some of the skills of applying and interviewing and receiving these new jobs.
Okay. Well, I know you had mentioned that last week. I think that the story came out maybe the next day or 2 days later. So you had mentioned that was coming out pretty quickly. And boy, this wasn't originally on the docket, and then I read the article this morning, and I think a lot of people are really interested in this. There's a big meeting tonight as council's going to vote on road projects. And I know a lot of you out there driving around right now are doing backflips and cartwheels, and you're jumping for joy because there are some areas that need to be addressed. And this isn't uncommon. This happens every year. You know, the plow trucks go out there, do their thing in the wintertime, and then you're left with these gigantic potholes in the springtime. And sometimes those could last at least into the early stages of the summer. I had some areas I thought they might address, and then I read your article even further to see that there are some areas that will not be addressed, but there's a reason for that.
Well, they are looking at 8 projects right now that they're going to be suggesting with funds from Issue 6. Now, you have to understand, when you're talking road construction, there are several pots of money that they tap to make as many projects happen as possible. So Issue 6 is only about $1 million, maybe $1.2 million that they have for road resurfacing projects. So they have 8 projects there, including Morgan Avenue, which I can't wait for the meeting because I want to find out why Morgan Avenue is slated at $600,000 for repair. I have not spoken with the engineer because this is a proposed project, so I want to come to the meeting tonight and learn a little bit more about what's wrong with that road, that it's going to take $600,000 to redo it. And so there's some other federal funds and other state funds that they can tap to so they can do more projects.
Yeah, the federal funding I thought was pretty fascinating because there was an area on Bridge Street that I drive through almost every day, and I thought, man, I really hope that's an area that gets discussed tonight. But as you pointed out in the article, there are a number of areas that won't be addressed simply because they're expected to be targeted through federal funding, which I think is fantastic. But are there areas outside of the ones that have already been isolated for the reasons we just mentioned that you have a pretty good idea are going to be brought up tonight?
No, tonight is specifically going to be about the Issue 6 funding because City Council kind of picks those streets. Residents can come in with their suggestions. Council members have their suggestions. And the engineers often have a matrix where they kind of put all that together and say these are the streets that have the highest priority that we should do this year. And so those are the streets that are going to be decided this year, tonight.
Are there residents who are going to show up to this thing as well? I mean, are they invited to this thing as well?
Public meeting. Anyone can come. It's a council meeting where they're going to just kind of go through the projects one by one and determine the, you know, which ones are the most needed and, you know, see how much each of them will cost. And, you know, they have a budget of money they can spend and how they're best to spend this money.
Is it possible for a resident to come to this one tonight and say, hey, you know, there's an area maybe that's not being looked at currently that maybe we should address? Is that a possibility for tonight?
There is a possibility. They always have alternative roads. If a project comes under budget and so they have a little bit of extra money towards the end of the year, they can tack on an extra 2 or 3 projects, which is what they did last year. And so if they have some residents who are coming in and kind of really voicing their concerns about a particular road, then they can do that.
Okay. Seems reasonable, I think. Well, we hear a lot about that. I know you guys probably hear a lot about it over there as well. I mean, people this time of the year, especially, you know, when I was going to say the snow's cleared. It's not, as I look out the studio window.
It's falling right now
as we speak. But, you know, this time of the year when you don't see maybe as much snow, you know, plow trucks have done their thing. And, you know, unfortunately, they do some damage on these roads in the wintertime. This is kind of what you're left with in the spring. And these things don't get addressed right away for all the obvious reasons. But, boy, it could be a bit treacherous out there. No question about it when you're driving around. I mean, when you drive a big rig like Matt Douglas does,
yeah, that's
and you've got spikes on your tires that can just blow right through those
potholes. I'm the guy, huh? I'm the guy who's breaking up all these roads. No, but I thought it was interesting you talked about being out there with the road crews. They put that down, and it wasn't like 2 days later we ended up with that 3 inches falling on us overnight. And I thought, wow, everything they've done now is kind of by the wayside because you're going to get these plow trucks coming through again and it's a tough area to try and figure out,
well,
especially
kind of
this time of year.
That's kind of the nature of that cold patch is just to kind of, you know, temporarily get us through until the asphalt plants open up and they can get that hot patch going.
Sure. Again, we're talking with Lisa Roberson of the Chronicle-Telegram and our local beat with Lisa. It's brought to you by Vandemar Jewelers. You put a pretty cool piece together a few days ago, and I wanted to hit on this. It's the March of Our Lives movement was something that was specifically done at Avon Lake, but I know a lot of other things are being done at schools around the area that are going to be awfully similar, you know, where the kids are putting together this walkout, right? I think that's the best way of phrasing it. And it seems like, you know, while schools aren't always going to be on board with kids organizing a walkout, this is obviously being done for a much, much different purpose. What was your biggest takeaway when you were putting that story together?
My biggest takeaway was how prepared the students were. When I spoke with a group of students at Elyria High School, they came ready with talking points and they had a plan for what they wanted to do with their walkout, which is a big contrast to a walkout that they were hoping to have maybe a week earlier from this conversation, but it was no organization to this. And so, you know, those ideas quickly fell by the wayside. They kind of came together on social media, and we were ready to cover that event if it happened, but the school principal kind of stepped in and said, well, if you're going to walk out, you know, give me your plans about how you're going to make this happen, where you're going, what are you going to do once you get there, how long you're going to be out. And you know, they had no answers for them. And so then they all came together and started organizing and really talking about what they wanted to say, what message they wanted to get out there. So that was one of my takeaways, is that they really put forth some effort in this.
It seems like, too, when you bring up that the principal speaks with the students here I don't know. It seems like everybody's on the fence in one way or another. They're either for this idea, they're either against it. I don't know how, if you've seen what's happening out there. And of course, Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School is what spurs this whole thing. And I mean, to me, it's the students saying, look, we don't feel safe anymore. Something's got to be done. But I think it's unique that Elyria's principal came to them and said, we can't just walk out. The goal is to keep you safe. And if you're just out there walking around, you can't be safe in that standpoint. I mean, it says something to Elyria's school system that the principal is kind of stepping in here and saying, if you're going to do this right.
And I also love the stance of Tim Brown, who's the principal there, because he also said there's a number of students who don't agree with this protest, who don't want to walk out, who don't think this is the right avenue to affect change. And he also supports those students.
Sure.
And those students won't be penalized if they don't want to participate in a walkout. And, you know, they can continue to go around their school day.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and essentially they were told to kind of pause and put this walkout off a week, as you mentioned, because I think originally they had the idea that the message was kind of skewed at first, or maybe it wasn't being presented the right way. Is that correct?
Yes, because, you know, they saw it on social media where a lot of schools across the country were walking out. And, of course, Elyria students were like, yeah, we want to do this too. But there was no plan, you know. Even when I was speaking to some of the students, I said, well, where are you going to meet at? Because, you know, it's a large school. And if you were like, you know, media coverage of this, you know, what, where are you going to be? I can't just be at every single door hoping to catch a kid.
Yeah.
You know, what are you going to say? Are there going to be student speakers? Is there someone that's helping you organize this? They had none of those answers for me. And so it was very refreshing to go back a week later and speak with students who actually had a plan about what they wanted to do.
Sure. Were they planning on going out the same? Westlake has done this at this point. Were they planning? Was that the same day they were planning on going out?
Yes, they were going to go out the same day as Westlake.
And I think Avon Lake had done it already. And I know there's one schedule, I think, a week from today as well. Is that the day Lorraine's planning on doing it? I thought Lorraine was going to do it the 14th. I know each school has at least taken a step back to, at least, as you mentioned, take some time to organize this so that they're sending the right message. Is that right? Did I have that right? I thought.
Well, the March for Our Lives is going to be hosted at Avon Lake on Friday. It's going to be around 9:20 on Friday. And then next Wednesday, March 14th, is when Elyria and Lorraine are planning similar events.
Okay. And I think on social media, too, there is a Twitter handle for Walkout, correct? Did
yes.
I get that right?
Walkout EHS.
EHS, that's right. Walkout EHS is the handle on that. So, I mean, clearly you can get more information there, too, to kind of see how the kids are putting this thing together. But I thought that was interesting, as you mentioned, the fact that, you know, school administrators are supporting this. I mean, I think when you take a look, and, you know, back when we were going to school, these were some of the things we didn't really have to worry about. But at the same time, if you were to put together a walkout, I don't know that it would have been nearly as well received. But I think it is interesting that it's certainly being addressed by the administrators, saying that, hey, if you're going to do this, you have to do this right. You can't just stage a walkout. So it's fascinating, too, that you mentioned. I mean, Elyria's principal essentially saying, you know what, you know, I also support those that don't want to be a part of this, too. And as Matt mentioned, I mean, it really kind of seems like it's 50-50 at this point.
And Elyria has precedent for this. You know, there was a time when students walked out over the firing or the non-contract renewal of an administrator that they felt very strongly about. And the schools kind of, you know, regrouped the students and said the best way to address this is to address this to the school board and let them know your concerns. They also had a, you know, a gender equality, you know, event. So they always know that students want to voice their opinions, but they try to funnel it in a way that's productive.
Good stuff. Well, next week, I promise you, we'll get back to our regularly scheduled Tuesday appearances.
Tuesdays. Wednesdays throw me off. I'm in the office and I see the clock and I'm like, I got to run.
Yeah. Well, we'll get back to Tuesday next week. Lisa, always a pleasure to have you in studio. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
All righty. Lisa's appearances, of course, are brought to you by Vandermark Jewelers. Vandermark Jewelers is a trusted name in jewelry. If you've been to Jim Vandermark's showroom before, you know exactly what I'm talking about. They're in Elyria on East Broad Street near the hospital. That's Vandermark Jewelers. Time for a break here on Bullseye on the Afternoon. Hour number two coming your way after this on AM 930. WEOL. Lorain County Restaurant Week is back for its second year. The Lorain County Commissioners invite you to discover the delicacies one plate at a time. 10 fine dining restaurants, 3 courses for $30. Make your reservations today at visitlorainecounty.com/locoeats. Enjoy comfort food with a Southern influence. Visit Green Square Restaurant at Dragon Ranch. Shrimp and grits, ribeye steak, fried chicken, and beignets. You'll love Green Square Restaurant's scratch-made comfort food and artfully crafted cocktails inspired by Savannah's rich history and classic low country charm. Relax and unwind alongside Southern dishes and those with whom you enjoy dining.